welcome to The Morning Magazine. It's Friday, September 30th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll get a preview of the Harvest of All First Nations Corn Festival, taking place tomorrow in Longmont. It's been 81 years since one of the largest single massacres of the Holocaust, and Denver's Meisel Museum is keeping the memory alive. We'll hear comments from the State Attorney General, son and grandson of Holocaust survivors. We'll then go to our .org segment, our weekly look at a local nonprofit. Finally, we have Sports Talk, our weekly regional sports roundup. At 8:30, it's the BBC News headlines, then Connections comes your way. Host Joel Edelstein will discuss the politics of simplicity, how we can encourage a simpler, more meaningful life. Then at 9:30, Dave McIntyre will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Jack Armstrong.
The Boulder County Board of Commissioners last night voted to deny a permit extension request that would have allowed the Sentimientos de México, or CEMEX, facility in Lyons to operate for another 15 years. County staff had negotiated a tentative deal that would have allowed the plant to continue operating beyond the expiration of its permit this year, in exchange for land designated for open space. The proposal met sustained and organized opposition from locals who attended and spoke at the hearings in significant numbers. Environmental groups say CEMEX plant is the largest single source of pollution in Boulder County. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment will be sending email and text reminders to Coloradans 65 and older, whose records in the immunization system show that they are eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine Omicron dose. The CDC has authorized the dose earlier this month. The booster will also protect against the BA4 N5 Omicron subvariants. A federal appeals court in Denver yesterday heard oral arguments in a challenge to 370 drilling permits in the Greater Chaco region of northwest New Mexico. The attorneys representing the federal government argued in favor of upholding the permits authorized during the Trump administration. The Western Environmental Law Center is representing the groups challenging the permits. The groups, including Dene Citizens Against Ruining Our Environment, Wild Earth Guardians, San Juan Citizens Alliance, and the Sierra Club. Opponents of the drilling permits say the Chaco Canyon area is sacred to the region's indigenous nations, and authorizing permits on federal land forces pollution onto indigenous communities, damages local ecosystems, and disrespects culture. They also say the move to defend the permits damages trust in the federal government, just as the Biden administration has launched a Honoring Chaco initiative. The city of Loveland has been removing homeless encampments from one of their most popular nature parks due to restoration needs. KGNU's Christian Garibay reports.
The city of Loveland announced yesterday that King's Crossing Natural Area will be temporarily closed for restoration starting today. The city had to remove close to 60 homeless encampments as a result of the restoration. The city announced its plans on restoring and fixing damage to the area, including fixing damage to plant life, fixing fences, and removing waste from the city's waterways. King's Crossing Natural Area, which is an underdeveloped open space in Loveland, has served as a home for unhoused individuals in Loveland for years. Michael Hefner told 9 News that he has been unhoused since August of last year and staying in King's Crossing since the shelter where he was staying closed in February. "Where do you go? I didn't have everything prepared. I didn't know exactly what to do," said Hefner. "So I followed suit with some of the folks around here and took camp down there at King's Crossing." City officials told 9 News that they have been trying to shift the homeless population out of the nature area since June as they develop programs that they think will act as better long-term solutions to homelessness. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
A violent encounter in Broomfield yesterday has left one person dead and a Denver police officer wounded. Police were reportedly trying to take a suspect in a homicide investigation into custody when a vehicle chase ensued Thursday afternoon. The man crashed into a vehicle carrying a family at the intersection of Sheridan and Midway. Police fatally shot the man at the intersection. The wounded Denver police officer sustained a gunshot wound to the neck and is reportedly in stable condition. Denver City Council will vote in November on a proposed study that assesses the cost and practicality of converting Denver office space into affordable housing. Kiara DeMare has more.
The study assesses the carbon footprint, building size, and proximity to public transportation of 5 to 10 buildings in downtown Denver. According to 9 News, Adaptive Reuse Senior Project Development Administrator Jenny Buddenborg said they're still developing the list on the buildings that will be examined. 9 News also wrote that Denver City Council will be voting on the Denver budget and whether or not this study will come into fruition in November. For KGNU, I'm Chiara DeMari.
It should be partly sunny, partly rainy next couple days, with highs in the 70s across the Front Range and lows in the 50s. Expect heavy rain tomorrow and some sun Sunday. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. A team of Indigenous-led environmentalists and food security advocates are organizing an all-day festival in Longmont tomorrow to celebrate corn and the corn harvest. Organizers of the Harvest of All First Nations Corn Festival say the event is part of an effort to reclaim ancestral Indigenous traditions, to reconnect with the land and healthy food systems, and to share the abundance. KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with Andrea Yoloteelto about the festival that will take place October 1st at the Yellow Barn Farm in Longmont.
The Corn Festival came about as a community effort when COVID hit and when we had to start recording, you know, our sessions online. I was requested to talk about the importance of the corn in relation to us as Indigenous people and in relation to us as a people of color or as originators from this continent. We gave the teaching and a lot of the community members and myself, we were saying, why don't we create something, you know, that is going to bring people back to the land, and it's going to be also helping us to just bring awareness and at the same time celebrate one of the foods that are actually super important for us as Indigenous people and has helped us to, you know, be here on this planet for thousands of years. So then we agree to have the Corn Festival.
Long ago in history books, when the colonizers, the Spaniards, came to America, they asked the Native Americans and the Indigenous people, where is the gold? We need the gold. And Indigenous people, Native Americans or First Nation people, they show the corn. The corn was the gold. See if you can speak about this concept.
So in many of our ancestral stories, they always talk about how corn has sustained us and been able to relieve hunger to our people in companionship to the other two sisters, right? That's why we call it like the three sisters, which are like the beans and the squash and the dance that they do in between them and how they help to repair the soil as well. And they create balance to regenerate the soil. So when we talk about corn, we talk not only about a sustainable meal that has kept us, you know, here connected with the earth too, but it also talks about regenerating the land. And the way that we are approaching, you know, things now, Harvest of All First Nations, is now called as a movement of food justice, where we are claiming back our rights to be back in connection as Indigenous people to the food that actually will remember our, you know, our body will remember and our genetics will remember, in order for us to get power back and become sovereign of, you know, of our food systems that are really depleting our health as people of color and that are actually affecting us, you know, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually.
Andrea Yolo, as she is known in the community, and we're talking about Harvest of All First Nations, about a festival, Festival del Maíz. You have 4 different sceneries: environmental justice, traditions that are spread through stories, and also concentration in everything that has to do with decolonizing systems. Hands-on activities on this October 1st from 9 in the morning all the way until the sun goes down.
We are going to have, like you're saying, you know, different activities and different stages and sharing some knowledge, you know, between community members Most of our speakers will be communities of color, representing communities of color. We have elders too that have been doing like this work already, you know, for several years, like Anna Chavez, who has her garden next to La Raza Park in over there in Denver. And we have other people like, you know, Rocky or Renee Chacon coming to talk to us, Maria Chavez to talk, and sorry, Maria de la Cruz, that is going to be able to come and talk about decolonization of birth systems. And we're going to have teachings about how to preserve your food and have food accessible to you for later on. Oftentimes we see that when we're gardening, we can produce so much, right? And we have a lot of produce at one time. And sometimes we don't even know what to do with it. But we're gonna have the opportunity to teach how to can food. So later on, you can prepare your salsas or your, you know, cucumbers and put them in vinegar and also like preserve them or the salsas to can them and have them available for you to use whenever you're ready. But the festival is not the ending point of this. It's actually a beginning point of us becoming closer as a community and the beginning point of continuing learning on how to become sustainable or how to become, you know, self-sufficient. So you can learn more about how to be planting more, you know, at your home and then having your own food. Because we know that after COVID, food got really expensive. And we're in a food and water crisis right now. So we really want to, you know, create this food sovereignty movement for sure, or help.
I have been speaking with Andrea Yolotel about Harvest of All First Nations, a festival that celebrates the corn and the people and the movement that you are mentioning right now, that is to go back to the land, to reclaim the land, and to be part of this healing process and in community.
Thank you so much.
For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better.
The Meisel Museum in Denver held its annual Babi Yar Remembrance Ceremony at the city's Babi Yar Memorial Park. The event commemorates the massacre of nearly 34,000 Jews executed by Nazi occupiers in Ukraine at the Babi Yar Ravine on the outskirts of Kiev over the course of 2 days, September 29th and 30th of 1941. At the Denver commemoration was State Attorney General Phil Weiser, whose grandparents and mother are Holocaust survivors. Earlier this week, he spoke with Metro host Miriam Schiff about the Babi Yar massacre and the importance of remembering the past while navigating current events amid a resurgence of anti-Semitism and white nationalist hate.
In 2 years, it added up to 100,000 people. But the first and most well-documented of the massacres took place on September 29th and 30th in 1941. They killed some 33,771 Jews. It took them 2 days to kill 33,771 humans. This began the two-year massacre at the ravine in which 100,000 were killed. We're hearing it today of what was heard in the Holocaust. The words unfit, the words vermin, the words that they didn't look like us, which meant that anybody who did not look like blonde Aryan Third Reich members were considered unfit. We're hearing that today. We're hearing the words for other people, immigrants that are now amassed on the border, that they're unfit, that they're going to take away something that we have. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Many people might have heard glancing references to what is called replacement theory. What many people overlooked about the march in Charlottesville was that marchers were chanting, "Jews shall not replace us." The ideology of those white supremacists is a hateful and dangerous ideology. And to put a fine point on that hate and that danger, the shooter in a massacre in Buffalo, whose goal was to kill as many African Americans as he could, left a manifesto on social media that said, "I'll come for the Jews later." And so we are confronting a rising ideology of hate. We are confronting rising anti-Semitism. How we meet that challenge is a critical issue of the moment we're living in.
I believe it was your grandmother who, when you would ask her, how did you do it? How did you live through all of that? And she said, I might be paraphrasing it incorrectly, but she said gratitude, and I still wanted to see the good in people.
That is true. My grandmother was the most positive person you could ever meet. And I believe that positivity is part of how she survived. Because if you look at, and I gave a speech to the Air Force Academy about this, her survival story, there were several critical junctures where either Poles or Nazi collaborators even saved her life, could have made decisions that would have ended her life, but didn't. And she was grateful for that kindness. I would ask her, Bubby, which is what I called her, how did you stay positive? How did you believe you'd have a better future during such dark times? She would say, it's easier to believe. She refused to be a pessimist. And I think that serves me well and would serve anybody well during this dark time. Because I do think it's fair to say, if you look at the arc of American history, during the 1930s, we had rising anti-Semitism, figures like Father Coughlin. During the 1850s, I mentioned the know-nothings, the anti-immigrant sentiment, the obviously attitudes on race and the Dred Scott decision and other painful moments. We got through those times and we emerged stronger from it. This is going to be one of those times.
That was State Attorney General Phil Weiser speaking with Metro host Miriam Schiff. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Up next is .org.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits.
Hi, this is Chris Schultz with KGNUs.org, and I'm here with Sally Ann Ray from the Boulder Bridge Unit. Sally, you want to talk to us a little bit about what you guys do and about the game of bridge?
Well, so the main thing that we do is play bridge. It's a really interesting card game. Its history goes way, way, way back. The modern form of it started only like in the 30s, so however many years ago that is. Bridge is a card game that involves playing with a partner, taking tricks, bidding. It is, in my view, unquestionably the best card game that there is. It's the most interesting. There is some genuine neuroscience research that indicates that playing bridge actually is protective for the aging brain. And our brains start aging really young. So even if you're 20, protecting for an aging brain is a good thing. Among many bridge activities I do is I am the co-sponsor coach of the CU Bridge Club. And there's also really solid research that shows that playing bridge helps students do better in practically every subject you can name.
And you've been recognized as a bridge teacher.
I have. There was a convention of the American Bridge Teachers Association. And I was nominated by one of my former students for Teacher of the Year. But anyway, I was a finalist, which is a pretty high honor.
You in particular run a few classes throughout the year.
I do. I am doing a one-day course called Learn Bridge in a Day. And we actually have people playing bridge by the end of the day. And I usually do that about once a year. And in between that, two or three times a year, I teach a 10-week series of classes. It's like 8 weeks of learning and then 2 weeks of just playing. And I'm going to be doing another class starting September 28th. If your listeners are interested, they could contact me by emailing me at ponygirlbridge@gmail.com. We do charge a little bit of money, even though our organization is a nonprofit, because we have to pay rent to the Elks. These all of our bridge events, other than the ones at CU, happen at the Elks Lodge. So we have some expenses. So we do charge a little bit of money, but it's a pretty good price. You can't take a class for less than what we teach. And people meet friends over the years. A number of my students have found life partners. I don't mean bridge partners. I mean romantic partners. People find good lifelong friends. So the two things that I would recommend are first going to the unit's website, which is boulderbridge.org, or me directly, ponygirlbridge@gmail.com. And I answer emails usually pretty quickly. And we'd just love to have more people join us in this game that we find so fascinating.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org.
We wrap up today's Morning Magazine with our weekly sports roundup with Jimmy Searfoss.
Is he reading headlines? Is he talking about sports? Is he a public affair? Tune into KGNU to figure out what the heck Jimmy is doing. Probably just screwing around. Hello and welcome back to Sports Talk with Jimmy, where we talk about the latest and greatest across the sports world in the Front Range. Now, it is the fall time, which means high school football is in full force right now. And with that, means high school rivalries are happening in full force right now. And today, I really wanted to talk about the rivalry that isn't. You see, every year in Boulder, Boulder High School and Fairview High School play each other on the football field. Now, these schools are just over 4 miles apart from each other. It's always a fun game to go at. The students are always super live. These guys are representing two parts of the towns. The fans are all around them. All of Boulder is looking down on this game. The rivalry is heated, but the competition is not. Pretty much every time these guys play, the outcome has gone the same way. Historically, Fairview has a very good football team, and Boulder does not. In the last 10 years, Boulder has lost 9 of their meetings with Fairview. The one that they didn't lose was in 2020, and that's because they didn't play, because they had a shortened COVID season. In fact, if you want to go to the last time Boulder won one of these matchups, you'd have to go back to 2007, 15 years ago. And honestly, things aren't looking that great this year either. Fairview has started their season off 4-1. Boulder started their off 1-4. Fairview is currently the 29th ranked team in Colorado. Boulder is 161st. That does not mean that these games are not exciting to go to. These fans are excited about this game. And there is some reason to believe that this game could be fun to watch. Their last meeting was in 2021, where Fairview was victorious 42-21. And I know how that sounds, but the game was closer than the scoreboard makes it look. Boulder found themselves down early, but then clawed their way back, and Fairview pulled away at the end for a victory. It was close for a time there. History may not be in Boulder's favor, but you really never know what you'll get in these rivalry games. Anything can happen. And that is just about all the time we have for you today on Sports Talk with Jimmy. Make sure you go check out that game. They play tonight at Boulder at 5 p.m. Be sure to tune in next week for next week's episode of Sports Talk with Jimmy. I'll be on at this same time. I've been your host, Jimmy Searfoss.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Thanks to Jack Armstrong, Alexis Kenyon, Chiara De Mare, Christian Garibay, Rosana Longobetter, Azucena Flores, Chris Schultz, Miriam Schiff, and Jimmy Searfoss for their help with today's program. Stay tuned for Connections. That's coming up after the BBC News headlines at the bottom of the hour. But first, these messages from our underwriters.